We're on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph at the very top, the fourth word on the line where it says Ve'ibayis Ema. The Gemara yesterday had a discussion about how to categorize the case of Shavuos Bitoy where a person makes an oath about the future. For example, he swears that he will eat, let's say, tomorrow, or he swears I will not eat tomorrow. And the person then does not fulfill the oath. So it turns out it was a false oath. The question was, how does the halacha classify this oath? And the reason that question is important is because we'll then know, which pasuk this particular oath prohibition goes with, and that is relevant to the question of how witnesses who see somebody about to violate his oath, how they're supposed to warn him. They have to cite the correct verse that applies. So Rav Dimi yesterday said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that if somebody violates an oath about the future, that's classified as Shvuas Sheker. It's a false oath. If it's a false oath, then it goes under the pasuk of Elosi Shavu Vishmi LaShaker. And that's what the witnesses would have to mention to a person who's about to transgress in order for that to be considered a proper Hasra, a proper formal warning that would then make the person liable to lashes. The Gemara challenged this assertion, though, from a Braisa that said these words. The Braisa said that the Shvua known as Shvuas Shav, an oath in vain, and the Shvua called Shvuas Sheker, false oath, are one. And the Gemara began by assuming, what does that mean, they're one? The Gemara assumed that the point is, just as an oath in vain is obviously not about the future, because the oath in vain, the classic case would be somebody swears that a man is a woman, or a table is a chair. So he is swearing about something that already is, and he is swearing that it is something that clearly we can see with our eyes it's not. So he took Hashem's name in vain, and he swore in vain. So too, the Gemara initially assumed the Braisa is saying that when we talk about Shvuas Sheker, that also refers to an oath about the past, not about something he will or will not do, which would be against the Rabbi Yochanan. Where yesterday suggested one way out of this, we had a different reading for the Braisa, what it really means when it says Shvuas Shav and Shvuas Sheker share a certain quality. Where today presents another possible approach to answer this question. Where it begins, V'ibayisim. Or if you want, you could say, this is what the Braisa yesterday really meant. The Braisa was saying that Kishem Shemevi Karban Al Sheker, just as certainly the halacha is, if a person makes Shvuas Sheker, and again we're defending Rabbi Yochanan's definition of Shvuas Sheker, which is that it's referring to the Shvuas Bitoy, where a person swears about something he will or will not do in the future. The Torah openly says that by that type of shvua, if the person violates that, then he'll have to bring the carbon ola v'yored. So the Gemara suggests to read the Braisa that just as the carbon applies in this case, kach mevi carbon al shav. So too, the person would have to bring a sacrifice for a false oath having to do with the past. For Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, any shvua about the past, whether it's something that's obviously not true, that this table is a chair, or even if he swears that he did something and really did not do that, or vice versa, any false oath about the past like that goes under the category of Shvuas Shav according to Rabbi Yochanan. The Braisa is teaching that the obligation to bring a carbon also applies to false oaths about the past. This reading would be Rabbi Akiva, he would follow the opinion of the Tanner Rabbi Akiva, the Mechayev L'Sha'over K'le'Habba, who, as we shall see on Chaf Hei, is of the opinion that we even include false oaths, what Rabbi Yochanan would call Shvuas Shav, in this obligation to bring carbon ola v'yored. The Gemara now challenges Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yochanan's definitions of Shvuas Sheker, Shvuas Shav, that again, he is claiming that if it has to do with the future, he swears that he will, let's say, do something, and he ends up violating that Shvua. Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yochanan says that's called Shvuas Sheker, whereas if it's about the past, he swears falsely about the past, and that's called Shvuas Shav. The Gemara now challenges this from a Braisa. So they asked him this from the Braisa, which says, Ezui Shvuas Shav. What is the case of Shvuas Shav? Says the Braisa, if Nishba Lishanos, he swears that something is different than what it clearly, obviously is. In parentheses, it says, it's a Yadua La'adam. It's known to mankind. Obviously, it's not true. So that would be Shvuas Shav. The Braisa continues, Shvuas Sheker means Nishba L'Hachlif. So the Braisa appears to be saying that Shavuos Sheker is very similar to Shavuos Shav. It's also about the past, just that it's not as blatantly false as Shavuos Shav. Let's say swears that he did something when really he did not. He knows in his heart that he didn't, but it's not obvious to people. You know, it's, you know, between him and God that this is not true. That would be Shavuos Sheker. So of course, this seems not like Rav Dimi and Rav Yochanan, who said that no, Shavuos Sheker means he swears, let's say, I'll do something in the future, and then he doesn't do it. The Gemara defends Rav Dimi and Rav Yochanan, and by suggesting Eima, we could make a slight emendation of the Braisa that, here's how to read it. Nishba u'machlef. Not that he swears lehachlef, he swears to, you know, change, or misrepresent the truth. Rather, this occurs in two steps. He swears, and afterwards, you know, turns that into a false oath, which obviously would be referring to some oath about the future. He swore to do something, or that he wouldn't do something, and later he was machlef. Later, he acted, you know, not in accordance with the oath. And this, of course, would fit perfectly with Rav Dimi Rabbi Yochanan's definitions, that if it's an oath about the future, that's what we categorize as Shavuos Sheker. The Gemara presents a different view on how to define these different concepts, Shavuos Shav, Shavuos Sheker. That is the following: Ki Asa Ravin, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. He said in the name of Rabbi Yirmiyah, who in turn said this in the name of Rabbi Avo, who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that these are the different cases. Ochalti velo ochalti. He swears either that I ate or did not eat, so he's swearing falsely about the past. Sheker. That is categorized as Shavuos Sheker. Ve'ezerasei milasi shavu v'shmi l'shaker. Consequently, its warning in the pasuk would be the pasuk that says, Hashem says, do not swear in my name falsely. So that's the pasuk that the witnesses would have to mention when warning the transgressor. Whereas if somebody swears either ochal, I will eat, or v'lo ochal, I will not eat, and then eventually violates that oath, over below yachel devaro, he transgresses the law in the Torah of a person shall not make profane his word. And he continues, v'yezu yishvus shav. And what would be the case of shvus shav? That would be the case where he's nishba l'shanos esayadua la'adam. A person swears so falsely about some matter. He says, he swears this table is really a chair, so as it's, you know, known to all that it's false. That's the case the Torah is referring to when it talks about an oath in vain. So clearly, Rabbi Avo's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion classifies things very differently. The Gemara comments, Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, you should know that Hada Rabbi Avo, this is a quote that we just mentioned, it makes it sound like Rabbi Avo said in the Beis Medrash one day that Rabbi Yochanan said these definitions as stated above. But Rav Papa tells us the truth is that Rabbi Avo made no such explicit statement. Lav beferish itmar ela michlola itmar. He didn't say this explicitly. Rather, Rabbi Yirmiyah inferred from something Rabbi Avo said that this is his opinion. And the inference is from the following. The Amar Rav Idi Bar Ovin, Amar Rav Amram, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. It was quoted from Rabbi Yochanan. And he said the following, that Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that Rabbi Yehuda said, the name of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the following teaching, Kol losase shabatara, lav sheyesh bo maisa lokan alav, regarding most of the negative commandments of the Torah, if the sin in question involves an action, then we give lashes for that. The transgressor would be subject to lashes. But if she'ein bo maisa in lokan alav, but a sin that does not involve an action normally is not subject to lashes. But we have some exceptions. Chutz mi nishba, except for the sin of a false oath, as well as umeimar, the sin of creating a tamura animal. Somebody creates a copy of an animal that's a carbon. He says, this other animal should be tamur of this, should be in place of this, which has the effect of making the other animal also a carbon, also has the sanctity of a carbon. But the Torah expressly forbids this. So that would be another exception, that, you know, even though it doesn't involve an action, just like shvua, it's not an action, it's words. So tamur also, he's just saying some words. Yet there's lashes for this. And the other exception is the sin of a person who curses his fellow with the name of Hashem. But again, even though there's no action there, still it's subject to lashes. Now, the question is, nishba minalan. From where do we know? What is the source that a false oath is an exception to the general rule that if it's a sin that doesn't involve an action, there's no lashes? So it was explained that Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Rabbi Yochanan said the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. And the source is Amar Kra. The Torah says, this is the third of the Aseres HaDibros, of the Ten Commandments. Lo Sisa es Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. Shall not take the name of Hashem in vain, ki lo yinakeh. For God will not absolve a person for this sin. From this language, you make an inference that Pasuk implies Bezdin Shalmala in Menakino, so the heavenly court will not absolve this person. Avo Bezdin Shalmata Malkino, so Menakino, so. The Pasuk indicates that the earthly court, Bezdin on earth, is tasked with implementing a punishment here which will absolve this person. It is that the Bezdin should administer lashes, and through the lashes it will absolve this person of the sin. So the Torah here is saying that even though this sin does not involve an action, still, in this case, lashes are administered. The Gemara questions this source. Some later, Papa Dilma Hachi Kamarachmana that Lo Yinake Klal. Maybe in fact, the Torah is saying, Hashem is saying that for this sin of taking my name in vain, a false oath, the person cannot be absolved at all whatsoever. And meaning, Bezdin doesn't give lashes either. Maybe that's what it's saying. Baye answers, Iksiv Ki Lo Yinake. If all the pasuk said was, shall not take Hashem's name in vain because he will not be absolved, and it stopped there, Ki Dekamart, then we would understand that it's you're suggesting, but Hashde Dechsiv Ki Lo Yinake Hashem, since the pasuk in actuality emphasizes that God will not absolve him, we infer from this, and Hashem Hu De'eno Menake, God will not absolve him. We are supposed to make this inference that Bezdin on earth, however, should administer lashes, and that will absolve him. The court on earth could absolve him. The question remains, though, that Ashkechan Shvushav, so far we have found the source, there are lashes by Shvushav, by oath that was taken in vain, Shvushaker Minolan. The question is, from where do we know that this applies to the other category of a false oath? Shvushaker, false oath. Regarding this, Rabbi Yochanan Didei Amar, this time Rabbi Yochanan answered himself, not in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and he darshined that lashav lashav shtei pamim. The pasuk states this term lashav, that this person, by making this oath in God's name and it was in vain, the Torah says he has taken God's name in vain. It says that twice in the pasuk, so it wouldn't say it all over again for no reason. And therefore, we utilize the mechanism of an imenu inyan, which works like this here. Yimeinu inyan l'shvua shav. If apparently we're not supposed to apply this teaching that it's taking God's name in vain for the subject at hand, because the Torah already said that the first time it stated that it's l'shav, taneu inyan l'shvua sheker. Therefore, apply it instead to the other category of a sin having to do with an oath of shvua sheker, and that is the Torah saying that just as we established that there are lashes by shvua shav, there are also lashes by shvua sheker. So said Rabbi Yochanan. Now, v'havi bar Rabbi Avohu. This is the part that's going to tie back to the original issue that we were seeking. Rabbi Avohu questioned the above. He wondered, "Haishvu sheker hechi dami? What is this case of a shvu sheker that Rabbi Yochanan refers to? What exactly was the false oath? Ilema shvua shelo ochal v'yochal. If the specific false oath was that he swore not to eat and then he violated the oath, he went and ate. That's the case, right? Lav sheyesh ba maisahu. Of course, he's liable to lashes for that, since he committed a sin which involved an action. And so, of course, there are lashes. We don't need a special drusha, special derivation to learn that there are lashes in this case. On the other hand, says Rabbi Avohu, Yela diyamar shvush ochal. If instead you say the case is this person took an oath to eat velo achal and violated the oath by passively not eating, then the problem is, hai miloka. In such a case, does he get lashes? Why? According to Rabbi Yochanan himself, he does not. For Rabbi Yitmar, as it was stated, this very case was discussed. Let's say somebody made shvua sha'ochal kikr zuayom. He took an oath, I'm going to eat this loaf of bread by the end of today. The day went by and he did not eat that loaf of bread. What is the halacha in terms of lashes? So Rabbi Yochanan v'Rish Lakish, the Amri Tarvayu, ain't a loka. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish rule, there's no lashes in this case. though they each provide a different reason that there's no lashes here. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Loka, Rabbi Yochanan says there's no lashes. Mishum dehavi lav shein bo maisa. Kolav shein bo maisa ein lokin alav. Rabbi Yochanan invokes the principle that we mentioned above, that whenever you have a sin that does not involve an action, the general rule is there's no lashes. On the other hand, the Reish Lakish Amar Loka, the reason Reish Lakish said there's no lashes here is Mishum dehavi hasra safek. He says the reason is because by definition, the warning that the witness would have given this person could not have been a valid warning because it was a suffix. It was never clear, you know, if the inaction that followed was in fact a violation of the oath. Like, let's imagine the case. The witness comes and says, hey, you swore you'd eat the bread. You better eat the bread now. Well, the fact that a moment later he doesn't eat the bread was not necessarily a violation of the oath because maybe he'll eat it 5 minutes later. So you can't really define a particular moment where he, you know, ignored the warning and, you know, that was the moment where he violated the sin. And so Reish Lakish argues this is called Hasra Safik. It's a warning, but it was doubtful if the transgressor's response was in fact a transgression at the time. And the rule is Vasra Safik Lo Shma Asra. When you have such a, you know, doubtful warning, that's not considered a proper halachic warning, and therefore there's no lashes. But either way, both of these opinions, and most notably Rabbi Yochanan himself, are saying that in such a case, if somebody swore to do something and then did not do it, there are no lashes. And so it can't be that when Rabbi Yochanan earlier discussed this case of Shuva Sheker, where he concludes that there are lashes, that he's referring to this case, and then that would be a contradiction. And so Rabbi Yavo explained, Rabbi Yavo, he therefore concluded, it must be tehei v'yochalti v'lo chalti. Established that Rabbi Yochanan's teaching earlier, where he said, you know, he derived from the pasuk that there are lashes, it's talking about a case, the person falsely swore about the past. Either that I ate, he said, or I didn't eat, and it wasn't true. Rabbi Yochanan derives from lashav lashav that in this case, even though there's no action, the halacha is there are lashes. The Gemara wonders, umay shna. The question is, in logic, what's the difference? How does this make sense that we're concluding that if he swears about the future, that let's say he will do something and then doesn't do it, so in that case we say, oh, there's no action, therefore there's no lashes, and yet when he swears falsely about the past, even though in this case there's no action either, still he receives lashes, what's the difference? The Gemara answers, Amar Rava, Rava said, Beferish ribsatarash was sheker dome lashav. Rava says it's not arbitrary. It goes back to the drasha. For again, we said above, the Torah repeated the word lashav. So obviously it's not coming to say the same thing twice. And therefore we said, okay, must be the Torah is extending, you know, this halach of lashes from the oath in vain case to a false oath case. The question is, which case specifically does it apply to? So says Rava, it's logical that the place that we extend and, you know, apply the same halacha to should be structurally similar to the original case of Shvua Shav. Namely, Ma Shav Lishav, or just as your classic Shvua Shav is of course about something that already was. It's not about the future, he swears the table's a chair. So Av Sheker Nami Lishavar. So it's logical to assume that this, you know, other equivalent case, you know, where the Torah is extending to is also a false oath about the past. So the bottom line is that we have this, you know, special scriptural decree that evidently refers to a false oath about the past. So in that case, the punishment of lashes applies, but if it was an oath about the future, he says, I swear I'll eat, and he doesn't eat. So there we would apply the general rule that if it's a transgression that doesn't involve an action, there's no lashes. And so it was this explanation of Rabbi Yavo, the way he's understanding Rabbi Yochanan's teaching here, from which Rabbi Yirmiyah inferred that, oh, we see that the way Rabbi Yavo understood Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that the definition of Shvu Sheker is a false oath about the past. This is where we got, you know, this is how Rabbi Yirmiyah attributed such a ruling to Rabbi Yavo. Not that he said it explicitly, but it's pretty clear, we can, you know, we can infer as much from this explanation that we just learned of Rabbi Yavo, of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. So we just said, Rabbi Yavo, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said that if somebody swears falsely about the past, the halacha is the punishment of lashes applies. What challenges is now, Eser B'Yirmiyah L'Rabbi Yavo. B'Yirmiyah challenged Rabbi Yavo in this from the Mishnah later on Chav Zayin Amud Beis that will teach us the following. Let's say somebody swears multiple times, Shvua shelo ochal kikar zu, takes an oath that will not eat this loaf. And says it again, Shvua shelo achlana, swear I won't eat it, Shvua shelo achlana, and another time, Viachla, and then he went and ate it. Says the Mishnah, Eino chayiv ela achas. He's only liable for that first oath, and that is because of the fact that as soon as he took that oath, it was a binding prohibition from the Torah to eat the loaf, and therefore the second and third oaths were not really valid because you can't just swear about something that you're already obligated in. The Mishnah then states, Zuhi shvuas bitoy shechayavin al zedona makos. This is the case of the oath of utterance. That's the language of the Torah about such an oath. This is the case where the halacha is that if it was done deliberately, deliberately violated his oath, then the punishment would be lashes, v'ashigigasa karbonol v'yared. And if he inadvertently violated this oath, we'd have to bring the karbonol v'yared, the special chatas, where there's flexibility. He can bring a cheaper one if he can't afford the expensive animal offering. So we note this declaration that it says, this like exclusionary terminology, zui. This case is subject to lashes or karbonol v'yared. So the question is, zuhi lemu'ute mai? What is the other case that apparently the Mishnah is coming to exclude and say, well, in that case, halacha is different. We don't say there's lashes or karbonol v'yored. The Gemara assumes, lav lemu'uti ochalti velo ochalti delo lucky. Seemingly, the Mishnah's point is that as opposed to if somebody swore about the past that I ate or didn't eat and it wasn't true, the Mishnah is coming to say that in this case, lo lucky, there are no lashes, which would be not like Rabbi Yochanan said above. But the Gemara deflects the question, where it says, lo lemute achalti velo achalti mikarbin. The Gemara says, true, the contrast case, that like the Mishnah is saying, you know, as opposed to this other case, is referring to a case where somebody swore falsely about the past, but it's not coming to exclude that case in terms of lashes just from the halacha of bringing a karbin if it was done by mistake. Namely, the Mishnah is saying as follows, Zuhi the Ashigigasa Karbonola V'yoret. Only in this case, where he swore with the future, does the Karbonola V'yoret apply if he inadvertently violates the Shvua Ava Lachalti V'lo Achalti Lo? But if it was a false oath about the past, the Karbonola V'yoret for an inadvertent violation does not apply. Now, in making such a statement, the Mishnah then is Rabbi Shmuel. The Mishnah follows the Tanna Rabbi Shmuel. The Omar Eino Chayev Ela La Asid Lava. Rabbi Shmuel indeed says in the Mishnah on Chaf Hei against Rabbi Kivi says that the Karbonol of Yared is limited to the actual cases found in the Pasuk where the person swears Shvus Bitoy about the future. There's no Karbonol of Yared though if he swore falsely about the past. The Gemara is suggesting Avol Milka Lucky. In fact, even a false oath about the past would be subject to lashes. Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara asks another question. Where it says, Ema Seifa. Let's quote the Mishnah later, that is the Mishnah on Chaf Tes Amid Aleph, which also says like a similar line. It says, you know, in this case, we have these punishments, but not in a different case. It says there, after having described the case of Shvushav, somebody swears, let's say, that a man is a woman, our table's a chair, says the Mishnah there, Zuhi Shvushav. This is a case of an oath in vain. Shechayavin al zedonamakos, where the halach is if the person deliberately made such an oath, the punishment would be lashes v'al shigigasa pater. But if he inadvertently made such an oath, here there is no carbon. So again, the Gemara makes a similar inference as the above. Zuhi lamute mai, what's the point of this language? That in this case, that's the halacha, but not in a different case. What's this other case it's alluding to? My love, lemute achalti velo achalti. Seemingly it's coming to say that as opposed to in the case where somebody swears falsely, but it's not like a blatantly false oath about the past. He swears I ate or didn't eat, so we don't know the truth, but he knows. Mishnah seems to be saying that in this case, the lo lucky, there's no lashes, which again would be not like Rabbi Avo said above. The Gemara responds, lo. No, that's not what the Mishnah means to imply. Rather, here's what the Mishnah is saying. Zuhi, the al-shigigasa pater mi karbon. In this case, where it was an oath in vain, he swore about something that's obviously false. It's known to all that it's false. In this case, he's exempt from a karbon olivyore. Avo lo chalti, velo chalti. But if it was not a blatantly false oath, so let's say swore that I ate or that I didn't eat, and this was not true, in this case, Ashigigasa Chayiv Karbon, he would have to bring a Karbon Olav Yoreh. If that's what the Mishnah is saying, well, it means then Rabbi Akiva he. This Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva, the Mechayev, Elishavar Kilahaba, who's of the opinion, as it will say, in Chafhei, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva says that just as the Torah requires a carbon for inadvertently violating a shvua about the future, the same thing in these cases where he swore falsely about the past. But the Gemara questions this. Gemara says, but Ha'amart Reisha Rabbi Yishmali. We just said earlier that the previous section, and we're assuming that these Mishnayos are really connected. It's a continuation there on Chavtes from the previous Mishnah. And so I thought you just said that the earlier part of the Mishnah that we discussed above follows Rabbi Yishmael, not Rabbi Akiva. So are you suggesting here that Reisha, Rabbi Yishmael, Vasefa, Rabbi Akiva? It's pretty unreasonable to suggest that in the middle of this, again, we're assuming it's one long continuation, that switches from Rabbi Yishmael to Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara answers that indeed, we're not going to say that the Mishnah switched in the middle from Rabbi Shmuel to Rabbi Akiva, and really cooler Rabbi Akiva. The entire Mishnah, even the earlier part, is going like Rabbi Akiva, which means, of course, that we'll have to offer a new reading of the Reisha part, the earlier part, which the Gemara now suggests as follows. V'Reisha lav l'mu'ute ochalti v'lo ochalti mikarbon. Now, like we said above, that the earlier part, when discussing an oath about the future, it says, okay, in this case, there's yes, a carbon, but not some other case. It's not coming to say with that as opposed to if it was an oath about the past, that there would not be a carbon. Not true. No, there would be a carbon. Because again, we're saying the whole time it follows the view of Rabbi Akiva. Ela lemeute ochal velo ochal mimalkas. Rather, the earlier section of the Mishnah which discusses where a person swears that I will not eat this bread, the Mishnah says, okay, if he then violates the oath and deliberately eats the bread, well, then he'll be liable to lashes. In this case, in particular, the Mishnah's point is, lema'ute ochal v'lo ochal mimalkas, as opposed to the other type of oath regarding the future, that, for example, he swears he will eat and then does not eat. The Mishnah is saying, in that case, there's no lashes. Avol, karban, michayev. But really, if the person inadvertently violated this oath, whether it was about the future or the past, indeed there would be an obligation to bring that karban. Of course, the reason for this distinction, that if he swore that he will eat and that he didn't eat, the reason why there's no lashes in that case is because the sin there did not involve an action. And there's no specific teaching from the Pasuk that there is lashes in that case. The Gemara wonders why this is a fair reading of the Mishnah. The question is, Umayishna, what is your basis for suggesting that when the Mishnah says the words, this case of where the person swore that he would not eat and then he ate, that line is specifically coming to exclude this situation where he made a different oath about the future, that he will eat and that he doesn't eat? The question is that, if it says Zuhi, it would seem to exclude any other case, including where it was an oath about the past. And basically, the Gemara is concluding here that no, it's not coming to exclude any situation of an oath about the past. The question is, that seems arbitrary. The Gemara says no. Mistavra koi b'lahaba m'mayit lahaba. It actually does make sense that the Mishnah is specifically coming to address, to make a distinction and say, not in this other future oath type case, since the subject of the Mishnah itself is also a future oath. So if it's talking about a future oath, and you say, okay, what's this, other case it's saying, and not in that other case, also a future oath. Does it make sense to say, the subject here is about a future oath? We should assume the Mishnah is coming to make a distinction about a whole different kind of oath, an oath about the past. That's not so reasonable. That's why it's actually a solid basis to say that the whole discussion in the Mishnah is about oaths of the future. The Mishnah then brought Rabbi Akiva's opinion that in this case of Shvua Shelo Ochal, somebody swears they will not eat, V'yachal Kol Shu, and eats the smallest amount, tiny minute amount, said Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah Chayiv. He is liable for that, for violating the oath, even though he had less than a kazayas, less than the amount of an olive. The rebuttal in the Mishnah said, it's not true, no, you would have to have at least the amount of a zayas, the amount of an olive, in order to be liable. So the Gemara has a question here about the understanding of Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Yiboylehu, they asked, Rabbi Akiva, b'kol ha-Torah kula, k'Rabbi Shimon Sfirale. Maybe Rabbi Akiva agrees agrees with the ruling of Rabbi Shimon that applies to all areas of the Torah. That is, the Mechayev Mashahu. Rabbi Shimon's view is that when it comes to any prohibition against eating something, the halacha is a person is liable to lashes even if he has a tiny amount. And perhaps this is Rabbi Akiva's essential argument. He's saying that, look, what does the Torah say about the definition of eating? Like, for example, when it's considered violating the prohibition of eating pork, how much pork do you have to eat? Even a mashu, even a tiny amount, and the person will get lashes. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah argues, if a person swears not to eat, what does he mean by that? Surely, he means the eating is defined by the Torah, which means even a mashu, even a tiny amount, and therefore Rabbi Akiva says, there'd be full liability if he ate just a little amount when he swore not to. And the Gemara brings a Braisa which presents this view of Rabbi Shimon, the Tanya. As it says in the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, Kol shehu lamakos. Really, even eating a tiny, minute amount that make a person liable to lashes if he eats some forbidden food. Obviously, it means on purpose, and there are witnesses who warned them not to. Rabbi Shimon says, V'lo amru kezayas el inyan karban. True, there is a minimum amount that's transmitted from Har Sinai as a tradition about the minimum size of an olive, but that minimum is only stated, says Rabbi Shimon, with respect to an obligation to bring a carbon. Like if somebody inadvertently ate chaylev, forbidden fat, if that was less than a kezias, Rabbi Shimon agrees there would be no carbon. But that's a specific tradition regarding carbon, but not regarding the general question of, at what point did a person fully violate some prohibition of eating forbidden food. Even a tiny amount is a full violation. And Rashi explains that if indeed Rabbi Akiva adopts the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, then that will actually mean that there could even be a carbon in our context of a false oath. Because again, once we say that Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Shimon that the Torah's definition of eating is even a minute amount, so then we say, well, that's what his intention was when he made the oath, that even if I eat a tiny amount, that's included, that would be a violation of this oath. And therefore, for violating the oath, assuming that it was inadvertent, he would bring that carbon olive yare. Now, according to this suggested understanding of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, Badinu de bayiflugi ba'alma. The truth then would be that Rabbi Akiva could have stated his opinion in a more general way, on the much more broad issue of what is the Torah definition of eating with respect to different prohibitions of eating? So why then do we find this dispute of Bikiva and Rabbanan with regards to this very specific question of whether there's full liability for this particular prohibition of somebody who swore not to eat? Gemara explains, according to this, the purpose of framing it this way would be lehodiacha kochan the Rabbanan, is to teach us the extent of how lenient the Rabbanan are, namely the Afal Gav the Ikal Meimar Hoelum Farish Chayiv Stam Nami Chayiv. Even though there's a potential argument in our particular case of this person who swore not to eat, one could argue that since undoubtedly everybody agrees, if the person would explicitly state in his oath that the oath means that I'm not allowed to eat even the tiniest amount, surely in that case, everybody, even the Rabbanan, would agree if he then ate even a tiny amount, that's clearly a violation of the oath. So on that basis, one could argue that even though he didn't say so explicitly, we always assume that if he says, I swear I won't eat, it means even a tiny amount. And yet, K'mash Malan, the Patri, the Mishnah, in presenting the Rabbanan's view, teaches us that according to the Rabbanan, if the person eats less than a kezias, he is exempt, because the Rabbanan are saying that we don't assume that he means eating the tiniest amount. Rather, we assume that he meant with his oath that he won't eat the amount that the Torah considers eating, namely, according to the Rabbanan, an amount of an olive. So that's one possible way to understand Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Odama, or maybe Ba'alma Karabbanan Svirle. Maybe on the general question of what is the minimum amount that's considered eating by the Torah, Rabbi Akiva agrees with the Rabbanan, not like Rabbi Shimon, that normally it's subject to the minimum amount of the size of an olive. Hacha hainu taima. And here in this specific case, where he swore not to eat, the reason Rabbi Akiva says he's liable even if he eats a tiny amount is as follows. Hoel umefaresh chayiv, stam nami chayiv. The logic we just mentioned above, that being that, you know, for sure, everybody agrees that if the person would explicitly say, I swear I won't eat in the smallest amount, definitely he would be liable if he then ate any amount. Perhaps, therefore, stam nami chayiv. Perhaps even without stating that specification, we assume that when the person said, I swear I won't eat, he didn't mean, I swear I won't eat the amount that the Torah calls eating. He simply meant, I swear I won't eat anything, even the smallest amount. Maybe that is actually Rabbi Akiva's logic. And according to this, again, the point is, it wouldn't reflect a general view about the minimum amount that the Torah considers eating. On that question, Rabbi Akiva agrees with the Rabbanan that it would have to be an amount of kazayas for the Torah to consider it an act of eating. Gemara makes an attempt to answer this, to show us, you know, which way is the correct way to understand Rabbi Akiva, from the words that we have in our Mishnah, Tashma. Coming here, the Mishnah brought a dialogue between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan. The Amrullah, Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan, said to Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, Heichan matzinu ba'ochel kol shehu chayiv shezeh chayiv. The Rabbanan's objection to Rabbi Akiva was, where do we ever find such a thing? Where in the Torah does it ever make a person liable for eating less than a kazayas? Rabbi Akiva's answer was not that, no, we do find such a thing. He gives a different response. So the Gemara points out, V'im Issa, if the first possibility suggested is correct, that Rabbi Akiva here actually agrees with Rabbi Shimon about this, you know, general question of the minimum amount that's considered eating, well, then, there's a much more obvious response that Rabbi Akiva should have given here. Lay Maludas, he should have said to them, to the Rabbanan, you ask me that, where does the Torah ever hold a person liable for eating less than a kazayas? Well, in fact, Anoa bekola Torah kulak Rabbi Shimon sfirli. That's actually always the way it works. For I hold like Rabbi Shimon, that indeed, even if one eats less than a kazayas, it's still considered eating. That, there should have been Rabbi Akiva's response. For the fact that he didn't respond that way, it indicates that the second way the Gemara suggested to explain Rabbi Akiva is the correct way. That it's true, Rabbi Akiva agrees that in general, less than a kazayas is not eating, and therefore he has to say a specific logic that applies to this case of an oath. But the Gemara deflects this proof by saying that we could understand Rabbi Akiva's response in the Mishnah as L'divrayim d'Rabbanan kamar lahu. He was humoring the opinion of the Rabbanan. He was talking like in their opinion, that is. Here's what Rabbi Akiva really means. Liddi di b'kola Torah kula k'Rabbi Shimon sfirli. If you ask me personally how I would respond to this question that the Rabbanan say to me that we don't find anywhere that eating less than a kazayas is considered by the Torah to be eating, personally I would respond that actually yes, it is considered eating because I agree with Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Akiva is aware of the fact that the Rabbanan don't agree with Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Akiva presents an argument that he feels that even the Rabbanan should agree with, namely, L'didchu, even according to your opinion, that in general, less than a kazayas is not considered eating, but Odu li miya, you should still agree with me about the issue at hand, this case where somebody swore not to eat, and he eats a little bit. You should agree with the argument that Hoel mefaresh chayev, since you certainly would agree that if he explicitly swore, I'm not going to eat any amount, even a tiny amount, that he'd be liable for eating at the smallest amount, stam nami chayiv. So even without him specifying that, we should assume that when he says, I swear I won't eat, it means even the smallest amount, because, you know, why do we assume that he means I won't eat the amount that the Torah considers eating? That's Rabbi Akiva's, you know, response back to the Rabbanan, bolstering his case, v'yamulei Rabbanan lo. But the Gemara explains the Rabbanan would respond to this that no, not true. In our opinion, when a person says, I swear I won't eat, he means that he swears he won't eat the amount that the Torah considers eating, and so that is the minimum of a kazayas. If he eats less than that, he's not liable. The Gemara now brings a conclusive proof about the correct way to understand Rabbi Akiva's opinion in our Mishnah. That is, Toshma, coming here, a proof from the Mishnah in Nazir. Of course, Nazir is a person who accepts upon himself the restrictions of Naziris, which include that he may not drink any wine. So in the Mishnah there, Rabbi Akiva says, Nazir shishara pito miyayin. Let's say a Nazir soaks his bread in wine. V'yesh ba kidei letzarev kezayis. If you add up the bread and the wine together, it adds up to the minimum amount of a kezayis chayiv. He'll then be liable to lashes for this. So the Gemara points out, V'yisa kedaitach ba'alma k'Rabbi Shimon svirlei. If the correct understanding of Rabbi Akiva here in our Mishnah Shavuos is that he agrees with Rabbi Shimon that in terms of prohibition to eat something, we never go by the minimum amount of a kezias. Well, then lama li letzaref? Why would Rabbi Akiva even have to discuss that the bread and the wine combined together to the minimum amount of a kezias? You don't need the kezias altogether. So clearly Rabbi Akiva does not accept Rabbi Shimon's view, which means the second way we suggested to explain Rabbi Akiva is correct. And the Gemara points out, V'yotanan, furthermore, there is the Mishnah later on Chav Beis Amid Beis that says as follows. Somebody makes an oath, he says, Shvua shelo ochal, he swears I will not eat, and then, V'ochal nevelos utrefos shkotzim uremasim, he eats something that's not kosher, one of the non-kosher animals or creatures. Says the first opinion in the Mishnah there, Chayef. He is nonetheless liable to bring a carbon for the oath violation. That's considered that he ate in violation of the oath. However, Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon exempts him from the carbon in this case. Now, Vavinan ba, Amai Chayef, the question was raised, why does the first opinion say that he's liable here for violating the oath? I mushba mer sinayu. I, this person, had a pre-existing oath that he accepted upon himself, that is, you know, his forefathers, the Jewish people at Har Sinai, accepted upon themselves, of course, not to eat these non-kosher things. As such, the shvua here should be meaningless with respect to non-kosher items. He already has a shvua against eating those. And so why does the first opinion say that it's considered, no, a violation of his oath, even if he eats non-kosher things? To answer this question, Rav Ushmuel, Rav Yochanan, the Amri, Tarvayu, all these Amorayim answered as follows, that the Mishnah refers to Bekolel Dvarim Amutarin Im Dvarim Masurin. The reason that first opinion says he is liable for this oath that he made is because the oath wasn't specifically directed at these non-kosher things, rather, the oath was a general oath. He said, I swear I won't eat, which of course includes kosher things. And so we say, you know, once the oath goes into effect with respect to kosher things, it also goes into effect on non-kosher things. This is a way to get around the principle that in general we say, you know, if there's already a pre-existing prohibition, you can't have another prohibition go into effect on top of that. But in this situation of kolel, again, in any ways, it includes other things, then it does go into effect according to the first opinion. But it's the next solution to this problem that's relevant to us, and that is Reish Lakish Amar. Reish Lakish suggests a different answer. He says, Yata Motse, you can only find a situation where the oath will be effective vis-a-vis these, you know, non-kosher foods. Ella, Ibn Mefaresh Chatzi Shir Valiba de Rabbanan, Ibn Stam Valiba de Rabbi Akiva, the Amar the Moser Atzmo Bekol Shehu. And now let's explain all of that. Essentially, Reish Lakish's answer is that true, the Torah says that a person is not allowed to eat these different animals and creatures, the non-kosher things, the trefa. However, the, you know, full liability for eating these non-kosher foods is only if the person eats the minimum amount of a kezias, the volume of an olive. So Reish Lakish's trick is that this person came along and made an oath such that, you know, he's prohibiting himself from eating even less than the shear, less than the amount of an olive. Eating less than the amount of an olive is not something about which there was a pre-existing shvua from Har Sinai. You can't say that there was, you know, full liability with respect to eating less than an olive's amount of these different non-kosher foods. That is why the shvua here goes into effect. But Reish Lakish adds that the details of how this answer is going to work really depends on the dispute between Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah. Namely, it's clear from our Mishnah that according to the Rabbanan, if a person makes a stam shvua, he just says, I swear I won't eat, the Rabbanan hold that, you know, that oath would only apply to the minimum amount that the Torah considers eating, that is, at least the amount of an olive. So if you're going in the Rabbanan, says Reish Lakish, the way I answer the question is that this other Mishnah is referring to where the person explicitly prohibited upon himself even less than that minimum amount of an olive. If you're going according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who we see in our Mishnah, says that no, that automatically, by default, we assume if a person swears I won't eat, we assume it means that he won't eat even the smallest amount. So Reish Lakish says, according to Rabbi Akiva, my answer is a little more simple, it's a little more straightforward. We don't have to say that it's talking about a specific case. No, automatically, according to Rabbi Akiva, the assumption is, when somebody swears I won't eat, then he means I won't eat anything, not the smallest amount. And so, you know, my answer would work very smoothly according to Rabbi Akiva, because, you know, of course then, such an oath goes into effect, because the prohibition of eating not kosher, that's only really, you know, the real prohibition is only for the person to eat a kazayas, a real act of eating, as defined by the Torah. Then he violates the prohibitions of eating not kosher. The Shavua came along and said, even if he has a tiny amount, so of course the Shavua goes into effect. It's doing something new. The Gemara now makes its point, which is, if the first suggested understanding of Rabbi Akiva is correct, Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Shimon that all over the Torah, there's no minimum amount of eating. Even the smallest amount is considered eating. Well, then, of course, the above words of Reish Lakish wouldn't make any sense. The whole point is that, in general, with regards to eating not kosher, the minimum amount is, has to be at least the amount of an olive, and that's why the Shavua is doing something new. The Shavua is saying even less than that. But if you say Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Shimon, well then, Kol Shehu Nami Mushba V'Omed Mehar Sinayu. It messes up the whole answer because then Rabbi Akiva holds that even the smallest amount was already prohibited from the Torah. It was already an oath we took upon ourselves at our Sinai not to do that. And so Reish Lakish didn't accomplish anything. El Alav Shema Minah, so must be that the second way is correct, that Ba'alma Karabonan Sfirlei. Then in terms of the general question of what's the minimum amount that's considered eating by the Torah, Rabbi Akiva agrees with the Rabbanan. It has to be at least a gazayas. And it's just that Rabbi Akiva argues specifically in this case where a person says, I swear I won't eat, that we assume he doesn't mean I swear I won't eat the amount that the Torah considers to be eating. Rather, he's simply saying, I swear I won't eat even the smallest amount. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. He's liable even for eating less than a kazai. Shema Amina, indeed, it's clear from this mission as well that this is the correct understanding of Rabbi Akiva.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.